It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 175 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm so glad you're listening because I have a great interview with the creators of Salvagers, Bob Sally and George Acevedo. The current miniseries, Abandoned Cargo, is coming to a conclusion soon, and they have a Kickstarter campaign going on. Of course, you go to Kickstarter.com and look for Salvagers, and you'll come up with Salvagers Abandoned Cargo number 4. And it's a very successful campaign, but they still have wonderful stretch goals that you can help them with and keep this book going. It's a powerful science fiction book, and I talk with Bob and George about the art and the characters and how the series came to be. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome to the podcast Bob Sally and George Acevedo, the creators of Salvagers, a very successful comic series that is available on Comixology and in other good places as well. How are you doing today, Bob?
Doing awesome. Thanks a lot for having us on, Wayne.
And you, George, how are you?
I'm doing well. Likewise, thank you for having us on.
Oh, good. It's good to talk about the book. I really love the book. I think it's a lot of fun. And I'm a big science fiction guy. So for me, most science fiction things about deal with people who are in way high society. And I just got done reading, there was a comic series on Robert Heinlein's Citizen of the Galaxy, and he'd started low. But then all of a sudden, by the end, he's like some major player in the universe. And I was like, well, that's nice. But, you know, sometimes you want to see people on different plateaus within the universe. And that's what Salvagers does. It goes places that we don't normally see in science fiction. So I really like that. Bob, do you want to talk about how the book came to be, where the idea came from?
I guess it's just... You had Star Wars, you had Star Trek, so you had the rebels fighting the Empire, you had explorers. And in my writing style, ever since I started writing, was always relating to the everyday person. So I loved sci-fi, I loved comics, but I also loved that genre of just keeping things for the everyday person. And that's what our main characters are. They're you, they're me, they're the people that every day like have the struggle of what they're doing, and they have their demons, and they are where they are, not by choice, but by the actions that they've taken in life. And they didn't choose to work together with each other. They've just been kind of pitted together with each other to make a buck and to get by in the galaxy. And I've always said that everybody you meet has their own battle, that they're struggling to live their lives. They have their history and they have what they want. And that's what these characters have. They all have the reasons why they're there, and they're all looking to make themselves better or just trying to kind of disappear.
Interesting, because a lot of times in science fiction, you've got everybody's trying to be bigger than they are, but I like the notion that some of these folks are not necessarily trying to be big. They're actually just trying to get along or trying, I like that phrase you used, trying to disappear. So very cool stuff. I wish more books explored the multiple layers of those things. Because, you know, as much as I love Star Trek, and I do love Star Trek, everybody is hugely smart and hugely able to do things, and there's no problems that they're facing, roughly. There's no money, there's nothing. They just basically go from day to day and go to the little cafeteria and eat all the time. And to me, to see what you guys are doing with salvagers is much more of a realistic point of view of how things would go in outer space, I think, should humanity or other alien races interact out there. So I like that a lot.
Well, I appreciate it. And that really sums it up. And I think that the basic origin was seeing the Death Star blow up. I always use that because it's kind of where it came from. Because when the Death Star blew up, it was like, all right, all the action excitement's done. Like, now what? Like, now you're going to have, you know, now you're going to have everybody coming for a piece of the pie and trying to get their buck out of this destroyed space station. And it just kind of grew from there. And I just created characters. And then after you created the characters, you just start building a history for those characters. Just after writing it, like, I had this female pilot, but I didn't really know who she was until I started writing it. And then as I started writing it, I realized she's on work release. She was in jail, and she was a pilot on a gun-running ship. She got busted. She went to jail, and now she's on parole. And this is the work release program that they put her in, was piloting a salvage ship. And that holds true for all the characters. We had them all, and George and I worked on the conceptual design of them, and it was one of those, I call it the tattoo factor, and I had an idea of what they looked like. And when George sent me the drawings of what we talked about and what he saw and what I described, it was just like, that's it. That's the character. And then after that, I actually tacked them up on my wall in my apartment. Whenever I would write, I would be able to see them, and then their history and all that just started coming out in the writing.
That's interesting, because a lot of us think visually. And, you know, George, how did you come up with the concepts? Did you guys talk about this together? Are you familiar with science fiction? Did you refer to other science fiction in order to come up with some of these concepts? How did you do it?
Not really. I mean, when Bob was describing the project, it just became something after he got into the storyline more than the concept of the characters. Once he got into the storyline, I could then see where he was trying to put these, the environment that they're in. And piggybacking on your concept regarding the Star Trek characters, my first aim was kind of towards that perfection of a character. And then once he started describing the story more, you can see their flaws and then put that into the characteristics of their posture and stuff like that.
Because, you know, Star Trek and all these other groups have aliens in there, and so often you get the bumpy-headed aliens. The good thing that you've done with these things is you've gone in other directions. None of them really have bumpy heads in that way. You've got one guy with antennae, you've got the other guy, the gray guy, who almost looks like he's wearing a mask on some levels. Did you avoid Star Trek when it came to that kind of stuff, or we're so used to Star Wars aliens and stuff like that? It was nice to see some new creative take on these aliens.
Design-wise, yeah, I definitely stayed away from that. And I think we even, in the beginning stages of the character development, had some kind of designs and some things here and there that kind of resembled Star Wars, Star Trek. And I think we kind of killed them off, Bob and I.
It worked great because I think we both had the same mindset that we didn't want to be, like, not associated with them. Obviously, those are the big two. So if you're ever going to do science fiction, people are always going to gravitate it toward one or the other, or imagine it in the world of those two. But I think we both wanted it to be its own universe. So we definitely tended to go in a different direction than that genre, or those big two.
Well, you know, the whole concept of salvage and stuff like that is a human concept. All of nature basically takes things and recycles them. We'll breathe carbon dioxide and a plant will take that in and generate oxygen. So there's not a lot of waste when it comes to nature as far as those things go. But in humanity, we excel at making waste, you know. And so the notion that people would get out into space and there wouldn't be all this waste going around is kind of crazy to me. So, you know, Bob, when you came up with that, you've got other alien races, but the humanity part of it is what drew me into it, about the fact that they're out there salvaging, looking for things that they can actually make some money off of.
Again, I think that that's the blue-collar aspect of sci-fi. And it's funny because I was just at a con, and you give your elevator pitch so much that it just becomes second nature. And that's what I describe it as, is it's the blue-collar side of sci-fi. They work for a company, Harrier Salvage and Rescue, and that's a job. It's a necessity. You have to go clean up space. You can't have these things just floating around out there. We also have, which will be coming in the next story arc, we have pickers and there's pirates. So there's other entities that if there's a ship out there that has this weaponry on it and the munitions on it, the governments want a licensed crew to get out there before any kind of black market dealers or militias get their hands on it. So there's a race for it, you know. Mm-hmm. So the action is there. And if you think about it, there's always going to be some kind of trepidation when there's a salvage out there. Because you're going to have very colorful characters coming up that they're not licensed crews. They don't get that first tip that there's a ship out there with photon torpedoes on it. But they're always out. They have to work harder. Mm-hmm. And when they do find it, they're going to do whatever they can to hold on to it. Because there's not another job right around the corner. So that's a whole nother aspect of the universe that we're building. So it's almost like something that a presidential candidate put into action that, you know, we're going to clean up this galaxy. Mm-hmm. We're going to provide funding to more salvage companies to go out and clean up space. So it can be anything. You know, it can be endless.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of human characteristics that move forward. And what's funny to me, though, is that these other aliens have come along. I would find that aliens would be sort of resistant to doing salvage and stuff like that. But on the other hand, these guys realize that there's money to be made with it and there's a life to be done with it. And I find that so interesting that as humanity, we don't necessarily make other races better. To some of them, we drag them down to our level sometimes. So I get a kick out of the whole business of how they're doing that.
And I think as the series goes on, you'll see why each character is there, what their motives are. And again, it's always peeling the onion of each character little by little to see where's their motivation. Why do you care about them and why are they where they are? Mm-hmm. But it's scripted and it's in the plan. And I think right now at this story arc, obviously in this story arc, and George, he sees it too, is Brigby he's the fan favorite right now. And obviously he's the character that we've dove into the most in the last three issues. Mm-hmm. I think that in issue 3, Tegan had a busy time in that one. In the fourth one, we're going to see more of Ronick. And in the next story arc, you're going to see more of Tyr. You're going to see more of all of them. And it's tough because in the writing, you're trying to convey all these characters, but you don't have the time to. So you really have to pick how is your story going to progress and which character is going to progress the story. So I think right now, Brigby's done that. He's the one responsible for what's going on right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that he's a fan favorite because obviously I'm doing my job as writing it and making people care about the characters. Mm-hmm. And I know that with George's art, he's such a colorful character. So I'm very happy with the last three issues that we did. And we can see that there is a fan base growing right now.
Which is great. Now, George, I'm kind of curious because, you know, whenever you get into science fiction, you've got to have a lot of technology involved. And you did a robot in the first issue, which Billy had to fight, the human. And I've always get a kick because technology is something of its own. You have to have an eye for creating these kinds of things, you know, displays, ships, all those kinds of things. Does that kind of thing interest you as an artist? Do you enjoy science fiction in that way? Do you like designing ships and all those kinds of things?
I do, but I think I have more interest in actual science and things that are going on, like the LHC and stuff like that. That's all interesting to me. As far as sci-fi tech, so much has been done in that genre, and some ideas have been just pushed to the edge. Not that they can't be pushed further. It's just that trying to get away or trying to be original is kind of is a very difficult thing to do. Find new concepts.
Well, I like that robot. The little knives come out of his hands and stuff like that. And he's fighting Billy in the first issue. And I like that because that, to me, was kind of unique. I hadn't seen robots that look much like that in the future. And so, you know, I read a lot of science fiction. So, for me, I really like the way you did that.
Yeah, that's actually was Bob's idea. He came up with the great concept of having those Catactroids, spoiler, with the blades coming out the sides of the arm. We did a couple concepts, but once the final design and, you know, that final look came through, we knew we had it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he sent me the panel of the droid jumping, and it was just, I mean, it just popped off the page, and it was like, yep, go with it. I got to say, because we did issue 1, I don't know when you sent me that podcast of Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo on Kevin Smith's The Smodcast, but I feel like it was George's way of telling me, like, you need to write less detail and let me have a little leeway with it. But it was great. You know, it was listening to the two, Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, talk about how Scott Snyder would send Greg Capullo a script that was like 48 pages long. And then as they got to know each other, they worked together better. Instead of sending one page was scripted to 3 pages long, he would just say to Greg, you know, like, I need some fighting. And at the end of it, this needs to happen. And I love the podcast. The podcast was great, and the message was received, George. But I think after that, definitely the script writing and the process and the production definitely went up a notch, because we did trust each other, and I did trust George. So it was like, hey, you know, like, I don't need to tell you who needs to be in the background or whatever. Like, I know that you're going to get it right. And I know that you're going to do it in a way that you're going to be proud of it, and it's going to look great. And there's things that a writer doesn't know about art. It's mm-hmm. like, you can't do this. Let me finagle it. So it was a great podcast, and I'm glad that you sent it to me. And I think that if anybody out there has read issues 1, 2, and 3, you can see that we keep raising the bar each time.
Well, it looks great. One of the things about comics is the writing can be wonderful, but if the visuals don't appeal, a lot of people are not going to put down their hard-earned money on it. And Bob's written a great story here, but George, your art also sells it visually. So you've got to have both of those things. I've got to tell you a really quick story. I interviewed Matt Kent and Scott Collins, who do a book called Pastaways. And the funny thing that happened was Matt, of course, is both an artist and a writer, but he's only writing this one, and he picked Scott because he liked Scott's art style. The funny thing happened to the two of them was that Matt would get the art as Scott had done it, and it was like seeing a whole new story, he said. Because visually, he had his own way of thinking about it, and when Scott brought it, it made it something that was something he enjoyed because it was something unique to his own imagination. And I kind of thought maybe that what you're talking about here is kind of the same thing, is that, Bob, you can conceive of certain things, but artists, somebody who can create artwork, probably has a different perspective than those of us who are writers. I'm not more of a writer. I don't do art very well. But I see stuff and I know when it's really good. But do it? No, that's not something in my... something I'm going to be able to do.
It's funny. I said I need to get a shirt that says I'm just the writer. Because I feel like every time I go to a convention, people are blown away. And obviously, if you don't know the series, it's a truth that the cover is what sells. You know, a book sells by the cover. Mm-hmm. And the covers look great. The artwork is amazing on the inside. Nobody's going to sit there and read the whole thing, so they're not going to know, like, well, is it a good story? But I always give them the book, and they'll flip through it, and they're, God, you know, your art is amazing. Like, you have really amazing artistic talent. And then I have to say, like, I'm just the writer. I created it. I'm the writer. But, and then sometimes you get that look where they're like, oh. And then, you know, so... Mm-hmm. Like, then when they buy it, you're like, well, do you still want me to sign it? And you're like, yeah, no, you can sign. Like, so, the art's amazing, and it brings people in. Comic books is a visual, mm-hmm. it's a visual media, but like you said, Wayne, the story's got to hold people too. You can have a great book and the art could be amazing, but if somebody's like, you know what, I really don't care what happens to these people next, then they're not going to buy the next book. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate it. I appreciate you liking it. I appreciate anybody that buys the next book. Is obviously it's a tribute to George and myself that they appreciate the art and they appreciate the writing.
Well, not everybody can write and draw. Matt Kent is one of those people who can do it both. And some people don't like his art style because it's kind of rough. But as far as like what you're doing, George, it's really great. It's powerful science fiction. And yet you do the characterizations as well. You know, the expressions on their faces, the way things happen in the panel, all that's really good. And I think, to me, it's the great marriage between script and art is when we can't tell where the one line ends and the other begins. I think that's great. So I think you guys work well together, and I think that's what makes it such a great book.
Thank you.
I appreciate you saying that, Wayne.
Definitely with Bob helping out, he sends me texts. He'll tell me the kind of feeling that they're in at this kind of panel. Or I'll have questions for him, like, what's he going through? Like, what's the purpose of the scene he's kind of describing to me? And that helps a lot.
Mm-hmm. I text George a lot.
Mm. Well, there's a lot of people who do that, who communicate back and forth about stuff, because it's interesting to me, though, that you're communicating with him, but you're not necessarily giving all the detail you did originally. That's kind of an interesting development, you know?
Somebody asked me at the last convention I was at, somebody asked me, like, why did you write this in a comic book? Why did you pick comic books to write this in? Mm-hmm. My answer actually was that, I mean, I love comic books and I love science fiction. And I think as a kid, I always wanted to write comic books. I always wanted to do science fiction. But the other thing that I've learned is that the distance between the best people in comic books and the bottom people in comic books is very close. At any point, I could be at a convention or George could be at a convention and Stan Lee could walk. He could be walking to where he's going to go sign autographs and he could walk by the table and he could see the art and he could be like, well, wait a minute. I got to see this. And he could come over to your table. I had Jason Momoa came over to my table at Boston Comic Con and I just gave him a comic. This guy's going to play Aquaman, you know? And I think that's so cool. If I wanted this to be a movie, Ridley Scott's not going to come over to me at some point and be like, hey, I heard you have a treatment for a movie that, you know, I'd love to look at.
So there's that aspect
of it. But also it's, if you want to look at it as something that's just a hobby, because I mean, obviously this started off as a hobby. Writing a script is one thing. Like I see it in my head and I wrote it and I give it to the artist. And then when the artist sends the panels over, like you said, Wayne, it's like looking at a whole new story. And then we give it to the colorist and we only give it to the colorist in like what, five pages? So she's kind of getting drips and drabs of a story. And then when the letterer gets it, so it's almost like a four-part process of telling a story that even the people producing it are surprised. I'm surprised when I see George sending me pages. I'm like, oh, that blew. Like, I didn't even think that it was going to come out like that awesome, but that was great. And then when the colorist sends it, you're even again, you're like, oh, you know. So it's a fun process when you have the different levels, like a writer, an artist, a colorist, a letterer. And then when it all comes together, you know, when issue 3 was done before it went to print, I was at my office and I copied pages of it and I stapled it and I brought it home and I had it next to my bed and I was so proud of it. I was reading it and with stapled pages and it's a fun process. And, you know, I hope that the whole team like feel the same way is like, you know, they can't wait to get the pages to be like, oh, like what's going to happen next?
Well, I want to ask a real question before we get into the characters, because I do want to get into them. How did you guys all hook up? How did you come together as a team on this book?
Well, George and I met, I was actually in Park City and we met through a mutual friend, Wendy Lau. I guess George, he went to high school with her. I knew her through mutual friends and there was a guy that I was working with who was doing concept art, but it was in the beginning stages and it was just playing around and I'd fallen off with him. Like we just haven't been talking. And Wendy asked me, she's like, how's it going? I was like, ah, you know, the artist, I haven't talked to him in ages. And she was like, well, you know, I just reconnected with a guy that I went to high school with and he's an artist. So that's how George and I met. And then we did it. We did it all. We put it together and it was George did the lettering. It wasn't colored. Then when we went to our first publisher, it had to be colored. So they hooked us up with our colorist, Asika, and she's in France. So we had her. We still had it lettered. And this guy, HDE, letterers, they don't like to give their real name. So in respect to that, I'm not going to give his real name. But HDE, he actually contacted me on Facebook and he just said, he was like, your series looks great, but the lettering could use some work. And I was like, oh, OK. And he was like, and by the way, I'm a letterer. So I was like, oh, funny that. So, but he's funny. Like, he's one of these guys that, like, I just don't think he sleeps ever. And yeah, he's a lot of fun to work with. And when he sends you an email, it's usually like War and Peace, just to say like, well, you know, two things. But he came in and so I was like, all right, show me what you can do. And he came in and it was good. And we realized that lettering improved it. So we kept him around.
Good. Now, why don't we get into the characters real briefly, because I know you said you've got some stuff you want to show us as we go forward, so I don't want to get too many spoilers on this stuff, but as far as like bringing together a team of them, how did you guys decide to do this? You know, you've got the human, you've got the purple-headed woman who was a technician, who's a technical expert, then you've got the big brute kind of guy, and then you've got, of course, as you said, the guy who's the big popular one. How did you guys decide this? Because, you know, a four is a perfect number for when you've got a group. You know, you've got the leader and then the other people do all their own different things. How did you guys decide who's going to do what? And without spoiling too much, because I do want to see where these characters come from and why they're there. Can you talk a little bit about each character and say what brought them to this place?
Originally, when I first started writing this, they were all human. But then I wanted to expand on it. I wanted to have more ability to just do what I want to do. So I made them aliens. And I just thought that four was a good number. And actually, I thought five was a good number. And when I originally wrote it, there was a robot. that was with them. But then I wanted to kind of have the intro story arc be more of an origin of how this robot came to be on their ship. So in issue 1 and 3, there's a G9 who's a Darzinian vessel droid, who's a four-armed vessel droid. And he's a vessel droid on the ship that they're salvaging, and he eventually will join the crew. When they leave, they'll bring him on, and almost like when you're salvaging, you're like, hey, here's a droid that knows a lot of stuff, and we can just take him on, we can bring him on, we can reprogram him, or we can get him up to speed on what we do, and he can be a part of the crew now. So yeah, it's like you always have to have a big guy, you have to have a little guy, you have to have a girl, and you have to have a captain. But I felt like in a salvager's world, you would have a demolition guy, you'd have a pilot, you'd have a captain, and you'd have kind of like that mechanical engineer that just knows how to do everything. And the captain and the demo guy and the mechanical engineer, they can all kind of multitask. They can do different jobs, and the pilot is the pilot. She can be used, but the four of them together, each one has their own job, but together they can also do different jobs. They can take apart engines. They can figure out, okay, what's worth what and where can we move this, or what government would pay for this. So yeah, I figure like there's a standard in this universe that we're building that each salvage crew would have. You'd have to have a demolition expert. You'd have to have your mechanical engineer, your pilot, and somebody to be the boss, but which is a working boss, you know, somebody that can kind of do everybody's job. So that's how I kind of came up with that. And then we have, of course, the artificial intelligence of the ship.
Yeah, which she talks to at the very beginning, and he kind of states the obvious to her. And she kind of goes, that's really great artificial intelligence you've got there. Which brings up another point, is that you guys build in a lot of humor, sometimes visually, sometimes in what's going on. It's great to see some humor involved in it, because what makes something balanced is humanity and characters that we can get into. And the fact that they are funny draws us into them. And of course, you've mentioned who you consider the best known or best loved character. And he's awfully funny. That's the funny part about him. He's very hilarious as he goes through stuff. And he gets in trouble more than the rest of them do together.
Oh, yeah. I always say, like, he's the guy, and it's the best way to describe, like, how these are characters that you know. Like, these are characters in your everyday life, is that everybody has that friend that just is, like, trying to borrow money off of them all the time and never paying them back. And the guy that, like, if he stays at your house for the weekend, he makes a mess of it. He's got the dishes, the sink's filled with dirty dishes, but he's not going to clean them. That's Brigby. He's just a mess, and he doesn't apologize for it. So, and again, I think that because we've elaborated with him the most, and he just looks cool. Those are actually horns on his head. And I've had older people that read it. They're always like, is that Ambush Bug? And I'm like, no. You know, you don't want to get defensive or anything, but you're like, I mean, I guess, I mean, what, because he's green? But I was just at a convention, and this little kid, he had to have been like 14 years old. And he was like, yeah, he looks like Ambush Bug. And I was like, I'm defending myself against like 40-year-olds. And now I have to defend myself against a 14-year-old. Like, when was the last time Ambush Bug was even on the scene? But it was funny. And, you know, the guy's dad was there. And I was like, you know what? He's like, you deserve a poster. Brigby's the type of guy that I look at him all the time. And I'm like, yeah, I'd have a drink with him.
Very good. Well, you know, this is a great book. If you haven't read Salvagers, I highly recommend it. The fourth issue. Any idea when the fourth issue is going to hit?
George?
I think July was the time frame.
We're looking at July.
Okay, very good. Now, will it come out in print first, or will it go to Comixology? How will that work?
It'll come out in print first. We'll see how it goes. I mean, it's one of those things, like, as soon as it's ready, we'll send it to the printer, and we'll send it to Think-Alike Productions as our publisher. Publisher, which, Wayne, you talked with them before. They're out of Florida. Ruben Romero. They got the agency, and they have Max Hunter, and they're working on Pray for Angels with the artist Sajjad Shah and Ruben and Bethany Romero, the writers of that. They'll also get a copy of it all for submission of Comixology, and Comixology, you're at their beck and call when they're going to post it. But we're hoping that we'll have it in print and in digitally around the same time, I think in July, and we're doing a Kickstarter right now. So all the Kickstarter backers, they'll be the first ones to get their copies signed and first print originals. And then we'll have it ready to go in trade paperback as well as the people that are already on board with issues 1, 2, and 3 can buy it as a single issue. Mm-hmm. And we're really excited about it. It's going to close out the story arc, but it'll leave you kind of raising your eyebrow and thinking, like, all right, where's this going? Mm-hmm. And personally, I'm very excited about it. I'm as excited about this one as I was with the first one. Mm-hmm. Because you have that sense of accomplishment. When you have that first one, it was like, I did one issue. Now with this one, it's going to be, I did one story. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great stuff. Oh, you mentioned the Kickstarter. Why don't we get into the Kickstarter briefly here? Because right now, you've reached an important level in your Kickstarter project.
We reached our goal yesterday, mm-hmm. which was huge for a weekend. As anybody that runs a Kickstarter knows that weekends are tough. Mm-hmm. They make you want to pull your hair out just because you get that lull. But we reached our goal yesterday, and we're only halfway into our Kickstarter. So now it's a process of looking at some stretch goals, mm-hmm. which bring on bonus rewards to people who are physical backers. So right now our next goal would be Salvager logo patches when we reach our next tier, and we're not too far away from that already. Mm-hmm. And I think we're like 16 days away from the end. It'll end on May 13th. You can look for us on Kickstarter. I think if you put in Salvagers, you'll see issue 4 in there. And we have some awesome rewards. We have figures. We have original sketches. We have original pinup pencils. Again, we have the trade paperback. We have issue 4. We have everything as low as the digital version of it, as well as the investor, where you get everything, and anything that even comes out in the future is yours. You go on an exclusive mailing list where you get everything that we do delivered to you as it comes out. And we're really excited. It's nice to hit that goal early. And now we can focus on giving more and getting things done in a timely manner.
Well, it's not like you guys couldn't stand a little more of the money coming in. So we encourage people to, if you haven't done it, support the Salvagers Project out on Kickstarter, because it's good stuff. And hopefully that'll mean we'll get even more of Salvagers as we go forward. So very good stuff as far as that. Now, as far as other projects you're working on, George, what other things are you doing besides Salvagers? Have you got other things that we should be aware of?
Not really. I've got some personal projects kind of considering right now. But other than that, Salvagers is it. It's all basically what I'm on right now.
Okay. Well, you've got a great website, georgeacevedo.com. There's a drawing, the first painting on there is a great big snake kind of thing chasing after what looks like a Viking or somebody with a sword or something.
Oh, yeah. Love that
picture. That was great stuff. So there's good stuff on your website as well as that. Now, how about you, Bob? Other things that you're working on?
Well, right now we're finishing up The Deliverance, which was another Kickstarter we did. And again, I'm working with Think Alike Productions and Ruben Romero, and we're looking to do some other stories. I don't want to get ahead of myself right now, but we have some scripts that we're working on just to bring to Think Alike, and we're having fun with it. But besides that, yeah, just working on Salvagers right now. That's the baby right now.
Okay, one last question. You get the 4 issues done. That's the end of your first arc. Any idea when you're going to start the second arc, and will that also be 4 issues?
Right now, it's looking like 4 or 5 issues. I'm working with my editor on that. Mm-hmm. The first and the second script of the second volume, I always have a problem whether to call them issues 5 and 6 or to call them issues 1 and 2 of volume 2. But the next 2 scripts after issue 4 are completed and ready to go. Obviously, though, as an independent creator, it's one at a time, really. And that's the rub.
Good. Well, Salvagers is a terrific book. You know, be sure, if you haven't picked it up yet, get it. You can go to Comixology and get issues 1 and 2, I understand. If they want the paper copies, where do they go?
They can go to www.salvagers.bigcartel.com, and we have issues 1, 2, and 3 on there, as well as a value pack where you can get all 3 of them for a discounted price.
Great. So it's easy to access, which is good stuff. Well, you guys are doing a great job, a fun book, a very enjoyable one. I love sci-fi, so you guys are speaking right to me, so I like it very much. So keep it up, because, man, I want to read some more of your good work, so I really am enjoying it.
I appreciate it, Wayne. And hopefully, as we get a bigger fan base, the comics will come out faster and faster.
Right. And George, thank you.
Yeah, thank you as well, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News. interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next week when I'll have another great interview with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.